Coming round the corner of the byre, I found Mr. Stokehill forking muck onto a heap, making a churned brown trail across the whiteness. "Now then," he muttered along the side of a half-smoked cigarette. He was over 70, but still ran the small holding single-handed. He told me once that he had worked as a farmhand for 6 shillings a day for 30 years, yet still managed to save enough to buy his own little place. Maybe that was why he didn't want to share it. "How are you, Mr. Stokehill?" I said. But just then the wind tore through the yard, clutching icily at my face, snatching my breath away so that I turned involuntarily to one side with an explosive, "Ah!" The old farmer looked at me in surprise, then glanced around as though he had just noticed the weather.
"Aye, blows a bit thin this morning, lad."
Sparks flew from the end of his cigarette as he leant over for a moment on the fork. He didn't seem to have much protection against the cold. A light khaki smock fluttered over a ragged navy waistcoat, clearly once part of his best suit, and his shirt bore neither collar nor stud. The white stubble on his fleshless jaw was a reproach to my 24 years, and suddenly I felt an inadequate city-bred softy. The old man dug his fork into the manure pile and turned towards the buildings.
"I've got a nice few cases for you to see today. Thurston's in here."
He opened a door and I staggered gratefully into a sweet bovine warmth where a few shaggy little bullocks stood hock-deep in straw.
"That's the youth we want."
He pointed to a dark roan standing with one hind foot knuckled over. "He's been on 3 legs for a couple of days. I reckon he's got foul." I walked up to the little animal, but he took off at a speed which made light of his infirmity.
"We'll have to run him into the passage, Mr. Stokehill," I said. "Just open the gate, will you?"
With the rough timbers pushed wide, I got behind the bullock and sent him on to the opening. It seemed as though he was going straight through, but at the entrance he stopped, peeped into the passage, and broke away. I galloped a few times round the yard after him, then had another go. The result was the same. After 6 tries, I wasn't cold any more. I'll back chasing young cattle against anything else for working up a sweat, and I had already forgotten the uncharitable world outside. And I could see I was going to get warmer still, because the bullock was beginning to enjoy the game, kicking up his heels and frisking around after each attempt. I put my hands on my hips, waited till I got my breath back, then turned to the farmer.
"This is hopeless."
"He'll never go in there," I said. "We'd maybe better try to get a rope on him."
"Nay, lad, there's no need for that.
We'll get him through gate right enough." The old man ambled to one end of the yard and returned with an armful of clean straw. He sprinkled it freely in the gate opening and beyond in the passage, then turned to me.
"Now, send him on."
I poked a finger into the animal's rump and he trotted forward, proceeded unhesitatingly between the posts and into the passage. Mr. Stokehill must have noticed my look of bewilderment.
"Aye, he just didn't like look of them cobbles. Once they was covered over, he was all right."
"Yes. Yes. I see." I followed the bullock slowly through. He was indeed suffering from foul of the foot, the medieval term given because of the stink of the necrotic tissue between the cleats, and I didn't have any antibiotics or sulfonamides to treat it. It is so nice and easy these days to give an injection, knowing that the beast will be sound in a day or two. But all I could do was wrestle with the lunging hind foot, dressing the infected cleft with a crude mixture of copper sulfate and Stockholm tar, and finishing with a pad of cotton wool held by a tight bandage. When I'd finished, I took off my coat and hung it on a nail. I didn't need it any more. Mr. Stokehill looked approvingly at the finished job.
"Capital. Capital," he murmured. "Now, there's some little pigs in this pen. Got a bit of scour. I want you to give them a jab with your needle."
We had various E. coli vaccines, which sometimes did a bit of good in these cases, and I entered the pen hopefully. But I left in a hurry, because the piglet's mother didn't approve of a stranger wandering among her brood, and she came at me open-mouthed, barking explosively.
She looked as big as a donkey, and when the cavernous jaws with the great yellowed teeth brushed my thigh, I knew it was time to go. I hopped rapidly into the yard and crashed the door behind me. I peered back, ruminatively, into the pen.
"We'll have to get her out of there before I can do anything, Mr. Stokehill."
"Aye, you're right, young man. I'll shift her."
He began to shuffle away. I held up a hand.
"No, it's all right. I'll do it."
I couldn't let this frail old man go in there and maybe get knocked down and savaged, and I looked around for a means of protection. There was a battered shovel standing against the wall, and I seized it.
"Open the door, please," I said. "I'll soon have her out."
Once more inside the pen, I held the shovel in front of me and tried to usher the huge sow towards the door. But my efforts at poking her rear end were fruitless. She faced me all the time, wide-mouthed and growling as I circled. When she got the blade of the shovel between her teeth and began to worry it, I called a halt. As I left the pen, I saw Mr. Stokehill dragging a large object over the cobbles.
"What's that?"
I asked.
"Dustbin," the old man grunted in reply.
"Dustbin? What on earth?"
He gave no further explanation but entered the pen.